pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, will you call the roll, please?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Becker?
Here.
Mr. Edwardson?
Here.
Thank you. Ms. Gladyszewski?
Here.
Mr. Jones?
Here.
Mr. Keel?
Here.
Mr. Nankervis?
Here.
Mayor Kelch?
Here.
A quorum is present.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Two orders of special business. The first one will be a proclamation on the Teacher Excellence Fund. And if I could have Lorraine Durr and Amy Skelbrook come up. Front and center.
Keep coming. Keep coming.
She's with you. Your backup is there.
So, I understand you two have some news for us tonight.
I do. Do I have to use the mic?
Yes.
I can use the microphone. 2 years ago, when the university said that they were going to move the School of Education here, you presented them with a symbolic check for $1 million. To establish an endowment for the School of Education at the university. And as of the first day of classes last week, we had, as of the first day of classes last week on August 27th, we had $1,004,044, and I have checks in my pocket for another $700, so we now... You now have in the bank to present the university with its endowment $1,004,744.
Good job. What is it?
So big thanks to the City and Borough of Juneau for doing this, and the College of Education is in Juneau, and to Lorraine Durr for doing a real yeoman's effort on going out and reaching out to the community and folks to help contribute the remaining amount and show that the population of Juneau also is putting in and investing in this as well. So thank you both.
And if people in the audience want to write a check, it's Juneau Community Fund. And in the little memo, you put in Teacher Excellence Fund.
Correct.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Now, if I could have Lorraine Durr come back up here. Proclamation. Whereas Lorraine Durr has lived a life characterized by willing to step out and challenge an unknown future, and whereas, over and over again, Lorraine has utilized her inner strength, high energy, and incredible intelligence to meet and overcome obstacles, resulting in positive outcomes, and whereas Lorraine has served as a school board member in Sitka, as state president of the American Cancer Society, as business manager for the Juneau School District, as commissioner of revenue during the HICO administration, as a valued educational leader at the University of Alaska Southeast, as CEO of the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association, as owner and operator of and I practiced that, Alaska Cooking School, as board president of the Southeast Alaska Food Bank, as a long-term member of the Alaska Mental Health Trust Board, as co-chair of the Juneau Whale Project, as fundraiser extraordinary for the University of Alaska Southeast Teacher Excellence Fund, and whereas Lorraine takes on life with vigor, confidence, and courage, and has repeatedly demonstrated her uncanny ability to reinvent herself. And whereas Lorraine's positive attitude is infectious like the Pied Piper, she attracts others to work with her to achieve professional and volunteer objectives. And whereas Lorraine has repeatedly demonstrated that when a familiar door closes, another door, often more exciting and personally challenges, opens. And whereas Lorraine has lived a life of service both as a volunteer who has demonstrated an ability to really make a difference, as well as a professional woman who crashed through the glass ceiling long before the term was invented. Now, therefore, I, Kendall D. Kelch, Mayor of the City and Borough of Juneau, Alaska, on behalf of the City Borough Assembly, do hereby issue this proclamation thanking and honoring Lorraine Durr for her service to the community of Juneau for these many years. Try not to read as much this time. On April 24th, 2017, Project Playground at Twin Lakes was destroyed in a fire. There was an immediate, deep sense of loss in the community, and many people stepped forward to help recreate a place where children of all abilities could play. Building a playground seems simple. There are countless hours involved in the designing, organizing materials, and constructing a place that accessible, safe, and fun. Community volunteers and staff work side by side to recreate a space that is similar to the old playground we all knew and loved, but even better. While insurance money was available to rebuild the bones of the playground, community members were clear from the beginning they wanted to be part of the build. In August and September, volunteers came together over the course of 6 days to complete the build and make the playground a reflection of Juneau's creative spirit. The playground is nearly ready for the children of Juneau to explore. The grand opening will be scheduled for Saturday, September 29th, from noon to 5 p.m. The fact that this playground is that unique, special place, it is a reflection of the countless hours of community service by hundreds of people who did everything from fundraising to design, from meeting with contractors to ordering materials, from construction to artwork, to checking in and feeding the crew of the workers, and so, so much more. Many people helped along the way, but the project would not be the success it is without the dedicated group of volunteers and staff who served on the steering committee and worked tirelessly during the community build. Tonight, the Assembly would like to recognize their efforts. And as I'm calling off the steering, well, let's just have all the steering committee members come forward, please. Steering committee members come forward. Mike Goldstein, chair. Alex Pierce, vice chair. Melanie Coleman, Lisa Lagerquist, John Pugh, Colleen McKinnon, Don Lee, Catherine Pusich, Christine Eddy, Amy Dressel, Kate Brent Gard, and William Paul. All right. Building heroes, in addition to the steering committees, Michael Coleman, Linda Sylvester. Please come forward if you're here. All right, Susan Jabell. And construction captains, Robert Gilchrist, Sean Egan, John Twigg, Nathan Adams, Zach Williams, Kobe Goldstein, Sam Keto, Norton Gregory, and Buck Willoughby. Additional volunteers, Kevin Ritchie, safety, Joanne O'Keefe, Sherry Van Wolf, and Megan Alderman from Sale, Amy Skilbreath, and Jenna Ratecki, Michelle Elfers. We got everybody up here. Ladies and gentlemen, this is what a community is about. Please join me in a round of applause and gratitude to thank these community members for their time and efforts. And you don't get to go away. Mike Goldstein, where are you? I need to turn this mic over to you for whatever you want to say. Well, mostly for everybody. There are some restrictions.
Just with great thanks to all of our many volunteers that came out and helped along the way. People who came and started early, people who came and started late, people who came and fed. It's just really wonderful to be a part of something so big like this. Thank you all.
All right, before you go back, you need to go along the assembly and shake hands, please, so they can say hello. That's all of you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. That brings us to the agenda to approve of the minutes. Ms. Becker. Is there someone in Radio Land named Mary Becker?
I've got you on mute. I'm sorry, Mr. Mayor. I move we adopt the agenda and the minutes and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there any objection? Manager's request for agenda changes.
No changes, thank you.
Is there anyone, Madam Clerk, here for public participation on non-agenda items? We have one person signed up on non-agenda items, if I'm reading this correctly, and that's Cam Burns. You want to come up and state your name and address, and you have 3 minutes.
All right. I'm Cam Burns, 7303 North Douglas Highway, been in town 42 years. 23 years of that, I've worked for various tour companies on the docks, so I'm right down there every day. As the season comes to an end, I just wanted to put some thoughts out there for people to be thinking about as we go forward with all the cruise ships and what's happening down there. I was asked by one of my guests the other day if we can handle more cruise ships and tourists in town, and after not much thought, I said no. We've gone past the point where much of the time we can offer the visitors a quality Alaska experience. The sidewalks and roads and bus fleets are maxed out. There are days at the glacier where the tour buses are lined up 15 feet deep waiting to pick up and drop off. Forest Service employee told me on one of the platforms the other day that she'd given up on interpretation because she couldn't even move through the crowd anymore. The glacier is a small area, but is being asked to support more and more people every year. We hit 1 million passengers last year. The situation felt a little out of control. That seemed like a good upper limit, something that with better planning and infrastructure, we might be able to sustain and still provide a quality experience to our visitors. This year was different. The number this year is about 1.2 million, and it's too much. Between the crowds and the shorter stays, the complaints about Juneau as a stop are increasing. I hear them every day. The last thing we want is for our city is our guests going home and complaining about the less than stellar experience they got here. I believe Juneau has reached and passed the point of being full. It's time we make some decisions. With the ships getting bigger and bigger and the number of these ships due to increase, what are we, the city, doing to make them improve their infrastructure to help us handle the increasing numbers? There are days and situations that are already too much for our beautiful little town, days and situations where it's time to say no. No, we can't handle another big ship on that day. No, we can't run any more motor coaches to the glacier. No, Auk Bay can't handle any more whaling boats. If the cruise lines want to bring 4,000 passenger mega ships to Juneau, they should have to submit a plan. What changes they are going to make to get all those people on and off in a timely manner so that the ship inadequacies don't reflect on the city of Juneau. And we hit that this year with the Bliss. 4,000 passengers, they came in and treated it like a 3,000 passenger boat, could not unload in time, could not reload in time, backed up traffic all the way through downtown, got off late every single day, both ends of the trip. It was a mess. And now we got the Joy coming next year, another 4,000. These aren't future problems. These are problems that are very obvious in 2017, and this year was exacerbated by the Bliss. It's too much, it's too big, and they came with no plan. Is that out of time?
It is, sir.
Okay.
Do you have written comments that you could leave with us?
Not in this form, but certainly, yeah.
Okay. Right. Any questions from the Assembly?
Thank you.
Thank you for taking
the
time. I need to check with you for just a second. And Fred, I mean Matthew Fred, where are you?
Hello, my name is Matthew Fred Jr. I reside at 1944 Allen Court at the Housing First. I have been there approximately 8 months. I wasn't there with the first group of people. I was at the Glory Hole when the first group moved out, and we immediately felt their absence and the lack of chores that were being signed up for and done. The things I've noticed while I've stayed here, mainly is that how the community has come together each time this situation's come about. And every week there's an inspection of the rooms, and I've noticed how the people have regained their pride in hustling around and making sure their place is clean and neat for inspection, and how they use positive peer pressure on each other to get that accomplished. And this last spring, they put one of their own away, and I was impressed by the amount of participation by the residents there to hold each other up in that sad time. And there's a lot of people involved in the project that came out to also support them. And I'm excited in how it will evolve in the future, and I want to be a part of that. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Assembly members.
Thank you, Mr. Brett.
Thank you.
The other comments that on Housing First, we will hold until we do that as an ordinance, which should be in under new business. And that is all we have signed up for non-agenda items. Which brings us to the consent agenda. Mr. Manager. Do you have any changes?
No changes to the consent agenda. Thank you.
Is there any public request for consent agenda changes? Is there any assembly request for consent agenda changes? That brings us to assembly action. Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move adoption of the consent agenda, and I would ask for unanimous consent.
Seeing and hearing no objection, the consent agenda is approved. So that will bring us to public hearings. Ordinance 2018-11. Madam Clerk.
Ordinance 2018-11J, an ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $1,800,000 as funding for the Juneau Housing First Collaborative, JHFC, funding provided by the Sales Tax Funds Fund Balance, the Tobacco Tax Funds Fund Balance, and the General Funds Fund Balance.
Mr. Manager.
This funding is to provide match for the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation's fiscal year 2019 special purpose goal round notice of funding availability for supportive housing issued May 24, 2018, with applications due on October 5, 2018. This funding opportunity was not anticipated and has a tight timeline for applications. The notice of funding availability will provide grants, zero interest loans, tax credits, and rental assistance to successful respondents who will acquire, rehabilitate, construct, or otherwise expand housing opportunities for Alaskans who have few, if any, housing options due to chronic homelessness, disability, and/or histories that present barriers to accessing mainstream housing. These populations must require intensive support service delivery needs, though this is not a program to provide treatment or correctional facilities. The original Phase 2 request from Housing First included a $1.5 million grant and a $2.7 million loan. Based on experience from the first phase, the Assembly opted to provide a grant. This ordinance was requested by the Assembly Committee of the Whole at its meeting on August 9, 2018. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Public comment, and we will begin with Heidi. Hi.
My name is Dr. Heidi Brocious. I live at 3340 Meander Way. I'm a professor of social work at the University of Alaska Anchorage as of a month ago, but have been working at UAF up until this time. I've had the honor of being the evaluator in charge of looking at the data for Housing First, and I'm also a lifelong resident of Juneau and a lifelong social worker, it feels like, even before I became a social worker. And one of the greatest challenges of my profession is feeling like you slog in programs and you don't make as much headway as you'd like to make. So when you come across a program like Housing First and you see numbers like I'm about to share with you and maybe you've heard, It's nothing short of amazing from a research perspective, from an effectiveness perspective. What I'm going to pass out to you, you may have seen. These are the decrease in service use. So we looked at four areas of service use: ER visits, rainforest recovery sleep-off visits, contacts with the police department for any reason, either as a victim or as a perpetrator, and transport by EMS, by Capital City Fire and Rescue. They had decreases of 65%, 99.4%, 72%, and 54%. Now, that might be a little abstract, so I did some fourth grade math for me, right, to make this more concrete. So what does that mean over a six-month period when there are 236 fewer visits to the ER? And you were talking about complex patients. This is 1.32 fewer patients at the ER. So if you go to the ER and you wait at the ER and you know there's a complex patient, this means every time in the last 6 months, in the 6 months that we look back, there were 1.3 fewer complex visits. What about your contact with the Juneau Police Department? That's decreased 436 contacts over the six-month period, which is 2.42 police visits, or police contacts, physical contacts every day. When we look at sleep off, that's 1.9 fewer people sleeping off at the Rainforest Recovery Center every night. And it's 2.8 fewer transports with Capital City Fire and Rescue every week. So this translates into real-time alleviation of burden on our public emergency system. And I think that you just don't see this in data. It's super encouraging. This is a model that's worked other places, and it's clearly working in Juneau, and I strongly urge you, like I did last fall, to follow the evidence. When you have a program that's working, when you know it's effective, when it's reducing the service burden, this is an opportunity to jump on that, expand it, and really embrace the success that we as a community have had as we come together on this issue. It's a complicated issue, but we've got some real evidence that shows that it works, and I'm encouraging you all to take that evidence into consideration, put money into programs that work, and fund the expansion. So I'll go ahead and pass this around if you guys would like that. And anybody else who might want one, because I like to promote the data. So thank you.
Can you just stay there for a second? Are there questions from the assembly? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jeanette Dunn.
Hi there. Thank you. My name is Jeanette Lacey Dunn. I live at 4444 Mountainside Drive, Juneau. Thank you. I'm a board member for Housing First, and I'm also the director of case management at Bartlett Hospital. I've worked at Bartlett for almost 16 years. I oversee the case managers who work in the emergency department, and I actually initiated the case management services in the emergency department about 2011. So I've been working with the population there and our high utilizers, which is really why we started that program. One of the main reasons was to work with our high utilizers there. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the charges that we've been seeing, and they can't exactly be equated to direct savings, so I have to make that really clear. But as you may have heard, for quarters one and two of 2018, we had 41 individuals experiencing homelessness that were high utilizers, and their charges for the emergency department totaled nearly $1.8 million in those two quarters alone. Additionally, we've got reports from GEMA, which is the emergency group, the physician group. They've had denials. So not only are we talking about the charges, but the denials for those who are Medicaid recipients. Looking at a period of about a year and a half, the end of 2016 to mid-2018, they've had $256,000 in denials alone. The hospitals also had we're about $242,000 that we have not been able to receive in payments that for charges for those visits. What happens is folks who are Medicaid recipients become locked, and those ER visits don't get paid the same. But what I want to say is that we expect that the same outcomes that Heidi talked about, we expect that to be the same for the recipients for phase two. We expect those numbers to be similar. We want to promote the culture of safety at Bartlett. We want to improve the health outcomes, which we have seen. We are able to engage these individuals in their health care better because they have a home to go to. And I just want to say that Bartlett supports this. Obviously, they agreed to a $250,000 contribution, and Gemma, unsolicited, offered us $15,000, which we're very grateful for. Thank you for your time, and I hope you'll continue to support this project.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Doug Harris.
Good evening. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Assembly members. My name is Doug Harris of 8128 Dogwood Lane. I'm the Chief Integrated Services Officer with JAMI Health and Wellness. JAMI provides the direct services, the clinical services, the case management services, as well as operating the medical clinic that is adjacent to the Housing First project or Forget Me Not Manor. JAMI's been involved in this process since the day Bill Hobson came down about 9 years ago, or came up from Seattle about 9 years ago to talk about this, and when Maria Levischuk and many in the community said, what an opportunity. We've been on board, we've seen the results. We never guessed that the results would be such that Dr. Brocious just presented. But we're able to see it every day as we're working with the folks that come in for services. The reduction in utilization of the emergency department is because we have Megan and Vicky, who are downstairs and able to see them whenever they need them, and to be able to expand this to an additional 32 plus is exemplary. The level of support that we have with Morgan in Montana is great because it provides them an opportunity to capture an audience that otherwise isn't being captured, because they're able to see them in an environment where they're comfortable, where they're home. And, you know, to be able to establish that rapport while they're in their home really provides that opportunity to engage them and assist them in getting the services that they need and to overcome and be successful. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harris.
Thank you.
Mr. Denton.
My name is, Bruce Denton, 5100 Montana Creek Road. Just a little bit of follow-up with Jeanette's comments. The residents that are likely to move into Phase 2 are all folks that would have moved into Phase 2 had Phase 2 been built at the same time as Phase 1. And I guess just as a parting shot, I think there's a tendency to look at new buildings and not take into consideration the life cycle costs of those new buildings. And I really view this as this request and hopefully this grant from the city as the gift that's going to keep on giving. The grant requirements include maintenance reserves and provide funding for operations. So your $1.8 million is basically going to be doing what it's doing and has done up to this point for the life of that building. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Keel?
Thank you. Mr. Denton, can you explain the significance? Your comment that all the folks who would move into Phase 2 would have moved into Phase 1 if there had been capacity. Can you?
When I first got involved with this project, one of the concerns that I have was build it and they will come. And if we started unloading the tent cities underneath I-5 in Seattle, I would have a hard time supporting ongoing projects. What my point is that has not been the case. The folks that are moving into Phase 2 are the same folks that we're going to move into Phase 1 before it ever happened.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that wishes to testify? Mr. Gregory?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Assembly members. My name is Norton Gregory, and I live at 1108 Fifth Street in Douglas. And I would like to speak in favor of the ordinance tonight, and that the City and Borough of Juneau support Phase 2 of Housing First. Annually, I'm here on behalf of myself, I'm not on behalf of my employer, but annually I attend the annual Housing and Homelessness Conference, and this year it's in Anchorage, last year it was in Fairbanks, and last year when I was there, I was proud to be a part of this community, and that we funded phase one, and that it was constructed, and that it's built, and people are living in there. Every year when they put up the map about who's making progress in Alaska, there is one community that stands out above the rest. And it is this community here that we live in. And we are doing the right thing by funding phase two of Housing First. We did the right thing by funding phase one of Housing First. And I would encourage you to support phase two of this project.
Thank you, Mr. Gregory.
Thank you.
Anyone else from the public that wishes to testify? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the Assembly. Ms. Gladyszewski.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move ordinance 2018-11J and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Seeing and hearing none, the motion is approved. And if people want to take a break and clap and leave. Let's take about a 5-minute break. Okay.
Mary and Rob, I'm going to leave the phone connection going so that we don't lose you.
Thank you. That's good. Thank you.
Okay.
Track. Okay, next we have Ordinance 2017-06-AY. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of up to $16,425 as partial funding for the Cold Weather Emergency Shelter, FY18, grant funding provided by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, the Trust.
So we have the fun, and we have the trust?
And we have the
okay.
Tongue-tied clerk.
All right. Sorry. Mr. Manager.
The Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority approved a grant request submitted by CBJ staff to cover the cost of rent to operate the CBJ Cold Weather Emergency Shelter Program from December 1, 2017 to April 15, 2018. Total rental costs for this time period were $16,425, which is the amount covered by the grant. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
Is there anyone from the public that wishes to testify? Seeing and hearing none, I will bring it back to the assembly. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move that the assembly adopt ordinance 2017-06-AY and would ask unanimous consent.
Seeing and hearing no objection from the phone or from the assembly members present, it is passed. Yes, I will. Ms. Becker, are you here?
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Edwardson.
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much. All right. Ordinance 2018-11H, Madam Clerk.
An ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $74,000 as partial funding for the Project Playground Rebuild Capital Improvement Project. Funding provided by community donations collected by the Juneau Community Foundation.
Mr. Manager.
Various community members and organizations are donating $74,000 to the CBJ for the reconstruction of Project Playground. The Juneau Community Foundation has been receiving these funds and will donate the funding to CBJ. These donated funds will be appropriated into the Playground Rebuild Capital Improvement Project. Public Works and Facilities Committee forwarded this request to the full assembly at its August 6, 2018 regular meeting. I recommend you adopt this ordinance.
We have one person from the public signed up to testify. Or Erica, would you come forward, please? And I would not even attempt your last name unless you help me with it.
I'm Erica Qureshi. I live at 113 Fifth Street in Douglas. I'm here to express my opposition to Ordinance 2018-38. A few days ago, I was tasked to pick up my parents from the airport, and they were arriving on Flight 79.
Can you hold it? Yes.
Mr. Mayor, I think we're doing the appropriation. We're
Did we do that? All right.
I'm on sales tax.
Okay.
Do I need
You're
to
on
wait?
Sales tax. Just stick there. My mistake.
Keep going or stop going?
Stop.
Okay.
Just stay there.
Okay.
All right? That was a rookie mistake on my part.
That's okay.
We haven't passed 2018-11H yet then.
Correct.
So I just went right by it. It's only 74,000, so. All right. Anybody that wants to testify on the playground? Seeing and hearing none, I'll bring it back to the assembly. Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move approval of ordinance serial number 2018-11H and ask unanimous consent.
Seeing and hearing no objection, the motion is carried. Now, we'll get to you, just hold on. Ordinance 2018-38B. Madam Clerk.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. An ordinance amending the sales tax code relating to transportation network companies.
Mr. Manager.
Alaska Statute 2935-148B was recently amended by SB 14 to allow municipalities the ability to require transportation network companies, TNCs, to collect and pay municipal sales tax on behalf of TNC drivers. SB 14 was needed due to the low level of compliance by individual drivers in registering with municipal sales tax offices and remitting municipal sales tax. Consistent with SB 14, this ordinance would update the CBJ sales tax code so that TNCs are held to the same filing and remittance requirements that the TNC drivers and other sellers are normally held to. After introduction at the July 23, 2018 assembly meeting, CBJ staff had multiple discussions with the two TNCs that are currently operating in Juneau. Numerous questions were raised and generally resolved during these discussions. Only one topic resulted in a suggested amendment to the original ordinance. In version B of the ordinance, CBJ staff no longer believes a sentence in CBJ 6905070A, page 5, line 24 through page 6, line 2 is currently necessary. The sentence is now denoted with strike through and underlining. The sentence was initially proposed to require a TNC to submit the names and addresses of its drivers to the CBJ. Both TNCs expressed concern that this requirement would pose a direct conflict with their disclosure limitations in the contracts with the TNC drivers, but the TNCs are able to require their drivers to register with the CBJ office before being eligible to drive for the TNC. Given the self-imposed enforcement assurances and the other amendments in this ordinance, CBJ staff believes the suggested amendment in version B, deleting a sentence, is reasonable. If version B is adopted and sales tax compliance with TNC drivers is still low, a subsequent ordinance could be considered that imposes more reporting requirements. Subsequent to publication of tonight's assembly, we received correspondence from two TNCs, including a letter today from Lyft with a proposed amendment. The amendment, I'll read into the record on the air, would add language to 6905-170 registration, which currently reads, a person, firm, co-partnership, corporation shall register with the manager before making retail sales, rendering services, or making rentals within the city and borough. Lyft has proposed including the following language in that paragraph, person, firm, co-partnership, corporation, or other business entity, including a transportation network company driver, shall register with the manager before making retail sales, rendering services, or making rentals within the city and borough. A transportation network company that collects and remits sales tax on behalf of a transportation network company driver shall notify such transportation network company driver of the registration requirement under this section. Nothing in this section shall be construed to require a transportation network company to register with the manager. In discussions with staff, we would find the amendment acceptable, and we would propose adopting version B of the ordinance with an amendment adding in the language proposed by Lyft to 6905-170. And trying a trial period of a year to see if it works. If it works, great. If not, we would bring back subsequent possible code language. With that proposed amendment, I would recommend adoption of this ordinance.
Thank you. Please, my apologies.
Not going to cut me off again, right?
No.
Okay.
We're good.
I am opposing the ordinance in its current state. A few days ago, I was tasked to pick up my parents from the airport, and they were coming in on flight 79, and they'd been traveling all day from the East Coast, and I was really sick, and
I had told my parents that I wasn't going to make it. I wasn't going to be able to pick them up and that they needed to find alternate transportation. And I don't know if anybody else remembers, but about a year ago, Alaska Airlines added in-flight texting to their array of great services. And it's the 21st century, so that's nice. And I received a text from my mom while they were on approach into Juneau, and the captain had told them that they were number 4 in line. There were a bunch of flights backed up, and so they knew that they were going to be the very last ones in and that there was not going to be any way for them to get home. So that's typically how it works with coming into Juneau on the late flight when a bunch of planes line up behind you or in front of you. It's hard to get a taxi. So I told her that I would take care of it. And so while their plane was on approach, I was able to order them an Uber. And as soon as I ordered the car, I was able to text the driver, Gladys, in a red Dodge Caravan. And I was able to text her and let her know that they were on the plane and they were getting off the plane and that they would be out soon. And I was able to tell them exactly what to look for. And she pulled up right to the curb in her red Dodge Caravan. And my parents were taken good care of that night, and so was she. And I've advocated strongly for TNCs because I believe it's not only an excellent service to offer the community and an amazing opportunity of income for the drivers, but I think it's a necessity for us here. And it's frustrating for me that Junos seem to be so difficult in accommodating the service, and to see that so many other communities have sales tax have not been as difficult and have been able to find a common ground and a compromise on that. And they've said that specifically that if the ordinance passes as is, that they will cease to exist here in Juneau, and I think that would be really sad. It's been a really great service. It's been growing, and it doesn't have to be so difficult. I think that we should be able to find a way to make it work for Juneau, like it's working in so many other communities in Southeast, other communities all over the state, country, world. Juneau should be able to do it too. So, thank you.
Okay, will we hold on for a second, please? Are there any questions? Mr. Nankervis?
Thank you. My question is, do you have any suggestions on how to make it work? You said it's not working. Do you have any suggestions for us on how to make it work?
The ordinance in its current state?
Yes.
Well, I think I would actually like to see Lyft's letter, because I haven't seen that yet. And I didn't come prepared with a list of items that could make it work. I mean, I thought that it was working. It has been working for the last year, but it hasn't been working for CBJ. So, you know, and I know that the TNCs haven't invested a lot of time recruiting drivers in Juneau because they've been waiting to see what you guys were going to do. So, but I would assume that if Lyft made an amendment to the current ordinance that it would probably work, but I haven't had a chance to really look at it. So I can't really give you a straight answer on that.
It's okay. Thank you. Thank you for testifying.
But yeah. So. All
right. Thank you very much.
There's got to be a way. That's my point. Thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome. Thank you. Anyone else from the public that wishes to testify? If not, I'll bring it back to the assembly. Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move. Let me get back to where I'm at in the agenda here. I would move adoption of Ordinance 2018-38B, and I also have a question for the manager.
Okay.
If I may? Mr. Manager, you said, I think your words were adding the proposed amendment to the ordinance. Was that what you meant, or did you mean to use the proposed amendment to replace the current paragraph?
Through the mayor, I would say replace. So in version B, we have the original language with additive language, and actually the proper motion would be to effect that change would be to replace.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mayor. If I may, then I would move adoption of 38B, 2018-38B as noticed amendment provided by Lyft under section 6905170, which is registration.
Can we do the amendment as an amendment?
I'm sorry.
Mr. Keel.
Would it be okay to consider the amendment as an amendment so we can talk about it?
Mm-hmm. So we're on the amendment now? Mr. Keel. Or Mr. Nankervis, you made the
Thank
amendment.
You, Mr. Mayor. For Mr. Keel's request, I can first move the amendment, and I would offer up the proposed amendment provided by Lyft, just spoken to by the city manager, for 69.05.170, which is registration.
Okay.
And I would offer that up for adoption.
Okay, Ms. Blanchard.
Or amendment, excuse me.
Do you want to reference the amendment?
I do.
Okay, Ms. Blanchard.
So, I don't see how this, so first the problem, drivers are not remitting sales tax, is that correct? In a fashion that we believe they're accruing. Right?
Mr. Manager.
Mr. Mayor, for details on what's actually happening, I would like to bring Mr. Singletary from the sales tax office up, if that's acceptable.
That is.
Because I don't understand how this solves the problem.
Hi, my name is Clinton Singletary. I'm the sales tax administrator with CBJ. I guess to answer your question, currently with the way TNCs are working, TNC drivers are responsible for remitting the sales tax. The tax is currently not being collected because of the way the apps are structured with both companies. So, yes, we've got a problem with driver registration and a subsequent problem with driver remittance of tax. We've got less than half the number of drivers registered with the city currently, and I'd say roughly less than half the amount of tax we should be getting is being remitted.
So, Mr. Mayor,
mm-hmm.
So the app cannot calculate, and even if you register right now as a driver, the app doesn't collect the tax. Is that correct?
It currently is not.
So that has to happen with the software of the companies, correct? Regardless of whether we pass this or pass nothing.
Correct.
And have they committed to doing that?
No.
Okay, so what does this do at all then? That has to happen, A, and then B, we discuss how to collect it.
The problem we've encountered is because the drivers don't control the app. It has been on the driver's responsibility to pay tax. They have not been able to control the collection of. So with this change, it puts the responsibility of tax collection on the company that actually controls the app, so that this ordinance would require them to collect the tax just as every other merchant is required to collect the tax on top of the selling price. So it puts them on level ground with every other merchant in Juneau.
And of course, I do want them to collect the tax and then remit the tax, mm-hmm. but this, if this amendment passes, it doesn't require the companies to, the drivers still won't maybe register.
Well, it puts the tax collection burden, the tax collection and remittance burden on the company itself. So all the text of the ordinance, all or many 17 pages, brings the TNC companies on the same line as other merchants in Juneau for tax collection and remittance. So it's more than just registration.
So this brings this back to Mr. Manager and Mr. Attorney. Where are we on this?
So Mr. Mayor, just following up on the line of question. So in terms of collecting taxes, a separate section, 6905-145, adds language taxes collected under this chapter by a seller or transportation network company on behalf of transportation network company drivers shall belong to the city and borough and shall be held by the seller or transportation network company in trust for city and borough until paid as provided in this chapter. So there are many things going on in the amendment or in the ordinance outside of the registration question. With regard to the registration question, there is always imperfect knowledge on the part of the city and borough of who is doing business. And so we are always doing enforcement and contacting about registration. So there will be, with regard to TNC sales tax, a registration burden on staff, which is relatively normal. And we will have to follow up on that to make sure that that registration is happening, probably in specific ways for
joining the meeting.
This type of business. Probably have to do some checking of the apps to see if cars are registered, probably a nominal amount of potentially audit writing, or in the past we've had drivers who voluntarily helped us get information. So there are ways that we will be able to check. In my manager's report, I recommended adopting the Lyft language and trying it for a year and seeing if we're actually able to get the compliance. So a couple separate issues, registration being distinct from responsibility for collecting.
Ms. Radicheski, and then Mr. Kidd.
I can now see how the registration maybe doesn't matter, but I still don't know where it says the company must do this. It says taxes collected by a transportation network company on behalf of the driver belonging to the CBJ, but it doesn't mandate that the company collect them. Where does it mandate the company collect them?
6905-030A. Says transportation network companies on behalf of transportation network company drivers shall add the tax levied in this chapter.
Wait,
to the
38?
30A.
30A, okay, yep.
And then as a follow-up, the next section, 05060, also requires the company to add the tax to the total selling price.
Okay, and that's... Then okay. I don't object anymore to the amendment.
Okay, Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. A couple things I still don't understand. Mr. Manager, when you talk about a one-year process, you laid out a couple of the ways that there might be some sort of spot check. Some of those, I think, are a little dubious to me. The sales tax office is able to look, you look at some of the comparable services, Airbnbs or vacation rental by owner. The sales tax staff is able to go through and look at all the units that are available and make sure that they have registered and are collecting and remitting sales tax. But I went to use one of these services for a car in Ketchikan, and it told me there were three available, and of course none of them were actually driving. So there is no functional way to do those kind of spot checks unless we're willing to sort of spend a huge amount of staff time chasing our tails. The alternate is in a year to audit. So I guess I'm asking you what you see as our level of comfort and what's going to be required to get to a level of comfort a year from now.
Mr. Manager?
Mr. Mayor, it's a different kind of business. So obviously with our bricks and mortar businesses, when they set up shop, they're easier to spot and they're easier to visit and they're easier to provide forms and explain compliance to. When people add Airbnbs or other online rentals, They are visible in that way. All I can really offer is that for each type of business, we have to have some type of auditing strategy, and we have to work through it and figure out what can work. I understand from Mr. Singletary that Lyft has at least verbally committed to some type of iterative process to work with us on this. What exactly that might look like through the course of months working together, I'm not exactly sure tonight. But I do think this is a step in the right direction. I can't guarantee you that we won't be back in a year and say the registration issue was not cured or was cured. And I can tell you it's a new kind of business, and it's going to take a different auditing strategy, and that has not been completely ironed out.
I guess, Mr. Mayor, that's my level of concern, is that this language seems really to lean us toward an expensive audit to actually know, whereas the other language, I think, provided a much lower burden for sales tax staff to check compliance. So that's a concern for me, that this is going to make it, this Lyft proposed language, in practical terms, will make it tougher to operate a TNC here in Juneau on a level playing field. Let me shift a legal question for the city attorney. I read this letter, read another letter from an email from another company. The difference between the TNC having to register versus having all the other legal obligations to collect, to remit, to hold in trust, the right to protest, I'm lost. What is the legal difference of registering versus everything else you have to do just like every other company?
So I think there's a little bit of confusion with the TNCs on this topic. The current ordinance, whether it's B or the Lyft amendment, does not require the TNC to register. It requires the current ordinance, as it's written, not with the Lyft amendment, requires that the TNC not hire a driver unless the driver has shown proof of registration. And that's one of the crucial differences between version B and the Lyft amendment. So right now, version B requires the TNC not to hire the driver until the driver has shown proof of registration, and the Lyft amendment doesn't have that requirement.
It doesn't.
No.
Okay. Mr. Jones?
So what is the if all of the ordinance is to hold the TNC responsible for collecting and remitting the tax, why is it necessary to know who they're contractors are? I understand that they're not considered employees. That's one question. Second question is, if I understood, when the state exempted TNCs from most of the regulations that taxis currently have to abide by, that many other businesses have to abide by locally, the state took on responsibility for doing background checks, for knowing who the drivers were, for knowing the vehicles were safe. So does the state have a list of drivers that are approved to drive in Juneau that work for Lyft or Uber or for TNC? And is that list public that the sales tax office could use? Because it seems to me that the state took on a responsibility to ensure that the Juneau public was safe if they used an Uber or Lyft driver. And it would seem to me that they would have a list of all of those persons, that you could audit that list against who's registered. But it also seems to me that legally you would have to hold the registrant liable for the tax. And if the TNCs don't register, how are they liable for the tax? So those are my major questions doesn't seem to be answered by any read that I get from this ordinance.
I would just ask if they're germane to the amendment or germane to the whole.
I think they are because we're saying the TNC doesn't have to register, but they have to tell us who their drivers are. TNC is telling us, we don't want to tell you who our drivers are, but we're going to tell all of our drivers to register with you. And Clinton is saying, we don't know who they are. We don't know how they're going to get registered. All I'm saying is if the state took on the responsibility to protect the public in Juneau from Lyft and Uber drivers by doing background checks where they have safe vehicles, all of the things we would do if they were a taxi in Juneau, then the state ought to have a list of all those drivers to audit against us. But I personally don't think this amendment does anything for me. I'm not going to support it. I don't think that, I think a TNC should register. And if they're not going to register and they're not going to tell us who the drivers are, then, taxis have to do that. Rental agencies have to do that. I mean, everybody that we charge sales tax has to do that. Why does this group feel that they can just thumb their nose and say no? And that's not acceptable to me.
Mr. Singleton.
I guess I could address a couple of those points. One, the way the state law was set up, it was designed in such a way that the drivers were held for the tax. Like, it was basically the drivers were the sellers. Because of the level of compliance that we don't currently have, the liability is still with the drivers. The drivers are interpreted to be the sellers. But the TNC company, because we're wanting to shift the actual mechanical responsibility of filing and collecting, it's being shifted to the TNC company, liability still stays with the driver. So that's one reason we've been wanting the registration of the driver, is so that we know who's there, who's actually been driving. Meanwhile, we're getting the taxes from the TNC company itself. We know who's then technically liable if we have all the drivers registered.
Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Edwardson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Singletary, if we don't know who the drivers are, how do we know who's liable?
Yeah. That's the main reason we initially in this ordinance had that requirement to have drivers register before they're activated with the company. So.
Follow up.
Just a second. Mr. Singletary, did you want to finish your thought or?
No, that's good.
Okay. Mr. Edwardson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I'm just kind of tagging on to what Mr. Jones was saying. We're not requiring the companies to register. They're not going to tell us who the drivers are. So how do we know if all of their drivers had actually registered?
And that comes down to what our audit process looks like, what the level of communication between us and the TNC looks like if we do pass this ordinance. You know, if there's some unofficial comparing of driver registrations, it might be something like that. And then, we check it in 6 months or a year against the TNC company's records. And if we find there is a big gap, then we can address that. I think one of the reasons we're leaning towards taking the Lyft amendment is because really, I mean, the big picture question is tax collection and remittance. Registration is an important part of that, but we're currently not getting any of the, we're not getting registration, we're not getting collection, we're not getting proper remittance. So I think if we give them a little good faith on the Lyft amendment, meanwhile, we're getting the collection and remittance, and we can follow up on the registration if there are significant gaps.
Ms. Flattish.
Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Edwardson, did you have a follow-up, Mr.
Edwardson? Just one more thing. I'm still not envisioning what you're saying. If they're not going to tell us who the drivers are, I don't know how we're going to follow up with them. you're not going to have a list to compare with. So I don't see how you're going to be able to do an audit at all. Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
It's kind of hard to say until we really dig into it, but what I'm envisioning is, you know, I know who's registered with me. I know what company they're registered with. You know, I already have some drivers registered, and I would imagine we'll get more drivers registered. But, you know, at in a periodic manner, I could probably send them a list of here's who I have registered. They can compare against. They can communicate maybe how many is missing. Maybe we can do some information sharing on who is missing on their end. It might be possible for them to take enforcement action against the driver if the driver is not maintaining a clause of their contract where he has to follow all local laws. That's a possibility. It's you know, kind of hard to say until you really get into it, but
okay. You see, to me, it's not hard to say. What we're doing is we're handing over regulation and enforcement to a company, and they're not going to have to share their records with us.
Ms. Gladyszewski.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. You talk about regarding significant gaps, how we would... I don't understand how we would know that at all. We have no names of anybody. But also, right now we're getting zero sales taxes from any, even the drivers that have registered, correct? They're not remitting sales taxes because they're not collecting it because they have no, unless people are going to give them 50 cents in their hand. They don't do that. Nobody does that when you take a Lyft or an Uber. It's all on the app, right? Nobody's collecting sales taxes right now. Is that correct?
Correct.
Zero people are collecting sales
correct.
Taxes.
Correct.
Right. So theoretically, if Lyft and or the TNCs, they must program their app in order to do that. So even if whether or not we knew the list of their 100 drivers or we knew only 50 of their drivers, it doesn't matter. We're relying on the information we're getting from the company itself, not from driver A through X.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, I don't understand why it matters what the list is, because we're not going to – it is being collected by an app, not by the driver who's collecting a dollar and putting it in his pocket and then handing that dollar over to us. That's not how it works. So – get why you want the list. But really, it's up to the company to remit the tax, even if it says they're remitting it for the drivers. So it's a circular, weird place we are right now. And so now we're getting zero tax, and if we do the Lyft amendment to make them happy, will they program their app? Have they committed to doing that, to collecting sales tax for us? And don't they collect tax in other jurisdictions? Does every jurisdiction in America not collect taxes on those apps?
So
are we the only community who was expecting sales tax to be remitted to us?
Not many communities across the country tax services like we do. So I'll start with that. There's, I'm trying to remember all your questions.
Hasn't this been solved by some other community who has asked them to collect taxes?
One of the headaches we've run into with these TNCs is that we're small, and it costs money for them to change their processes for a small community. And so that's been one of the
that's why
bits
I
of
asked,
feedback.
Hasn't been solved in Chicago or New York, or there's no other big community that they've solved this for, and they can just click the button and turn it on in Juneau?
There are communities where tax is being charged. Why they're not doing it here, I can't answer that. But I can tell you, I want to back up to the way we are getting tax from drivers, they're paying it out of their pocket. So they're not collecting it, but they're paying tax out of pocket because the TNCs won't adapt their app to collect the proper tax.
Okay, so we are getting some.
It's just
you
not
earlier being, said that we weren't getting any.
It's not being collected, but we're getting tax paid to us.
Okay, so the companies have solved this problem in other communities. You know for a fact that they're collecting sales taxes elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Keel.
So I guess let me just, I remain concerned that this language really sets up a much more onerous process unless you decide to sort of half do your job. And I don't like either thought of the sales tax office half doing its job or a really expensive and onerous audit. Question for the attorney would be, are you comfortable with the language as modified by the amendment? Does the sales tax office have the ability to do a full audit that could reveal whether all the tax is being collected and remitted appropriately?
I think that's a similar question, excuse me, that the manager answered in a slightly different color. I think my understanding with the negotiations with the two TNCs is Lyft has been more supportive, submitted a letter of support for this ordinance if this change is made. And I think the approach, if I understand Mr. Singletary and Lyft's comments, is that they would work that audit system out, and the manager's approach is he's willing to give that a try, and if it doesn't work, we can either come back to you, or there are probably civil actions that we could file against the TNCs if we have reason to believe that they're not collecting and remitting sales tax consistent with this ordinance, giving citations to those two provisions that Ms. Gladyszewski was asking about earlier.
Just Mr. Keel, just to clarify it a minute, that sounds like no, not an audit, yes, a lawsuit. Is that what I?
Short answer, this gives the sales tax office an opportunity to work, as Mr. Singletary described, in good faith with Lyft and hopefully Uber if they stay here. But it also has the tools, if we need to file suit, to obtain whatever information we need to make sure taxes have been remitted if they haven't been collected and remitted.
Ms. Gladyszewski.
So I'm back to a question that was already asked that I didn't understand the answer. What is the objection to registering? The last sentence, nothing in this section shall be construed to require a TNC to register with the manager. Like they're either responsible or are they trying not to be responsible by saying that? I mean, who's responsible for remitting the tax? If is it clear?
Mr. Secretary?
Or Mr. Palmer, go ahead.
So it goes back to, again, how the state law was set up. It was set up with the idea that TNC drivers were the sellers. And so under our code, sellers are the ones required to register. So TNC companies were never considered to be the seller, therefore we're not requiring them to register. They're simply doing the mechanical collection and remittance.
Okay.
Mr. Manager?
So just to clarify, so one argument with TNCs, from TNCs, is they're a matchmaking service. They don't do business here. The people that do business are the drivers. And so I suspect that they're not wanting to, nothing in this section shall be construed to require the company to register. It's probably other communities where there are other implications. What I see here is we have an unlevel playing field that's been disappointing for taxi companies that register and file and pay. And Lyft has cooperated with staff, and they proposed a path forward that helps us, if not solve perfectly, begin to solve that unlevel playing field. And it seems to me a good step to make our next move in concert with a major TNC who is agreeing to all the provisions in our ordinance. And if it's not working, We'll be back and we'll have evidence on why it's not working and recommendation on how to proceed. But in my view, this advances the issue for the borough.
Thank you.
All right, we are at the amendment. Is there further discussion on the amendment?
I have a technical type question.
Mr. Edwardson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and this is for the manager. So the manager's report, I'm on board view right now, looking at the manager's report along with all the attachments. Essentially, the manager's report is incorrect now if we adopt this amendment. Because then what this says is consistent with SB 14, the ordinance would update the CBJ tax code so that TNCs are held to the same filing and remittance requirement that the TNC drivers and other sellers are normally held to. We're changing that, correct?
Mr. Manager.
So, Mr. Mayor, Mr. Edwardson is correct. The manager's report that was published last week is outdated given this new request and proposal from Lyft.
Correct. Okay, thank you.
Madam Clerk, are you prepared to read the amendment?
I am, Mr. Mayor. So the amendment would be to Ordinance 2018-38B with replacement of language contained on the last page 6905170 registration to read a person, firm, co-partnership, corporation, or other business entity, including a transportation network company driver, shall register with the manager before making retail sales, rendering services, or making rentals within the city and borough. A transportation network company that collects and remits sales tax on behalf of a transportation network company driver shall notify such transportation network company driver of the registration requirement under this section. Nothing in this section shall be construed to require a transportation network company to register with the manager.
All right. Is there further discussion on the amendment? Is there objection to the amendment?
Yes.
Clerk, please call the roll on the amendment.
Mr. Nankervis.
No.
Mr. Keel.
Yes.
Mr. Jones.
No.
Ms. Gladyszewski.
Yes.
Mr. Edwardson.
Yes.
Ms. Becker.
Yes.
Mayor Kelch.
Yes.
Motion carries 5-2.
All right, we're back to the main motion as amended. Is there discussion on the main motion as amended, Mr. Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. A question for staff. The whole goal, I agree with what the manager said, the whole goal is a level playing field. So I understand that there's discussion about whether sales tax applies to the total fare paid by the passenger, or whether it applies only to the portion of the fare that the TNC provides to the driver. And I hope to get, could you clarify that and how it compares to taxis with their dispatch system?
Both TNCs have slightly different fee structures. So I'm more familiar with Uber's fee structure. They've got a flat rate, I believe they call it a booking fee, and then there's a fare that's made up into three parts: flat rate fare, a mileage rate, and a time rate. That all gets totaled up to determine the total amount paid by the rider. It's a little different than taxis because taxis are metered, and our code is set up such that metered fees have tax included.
I guess for comparison's sake, they're hard to compare, other than, you know, our interpretation is selling price is the amount paid by the passenger. You know, we'd have to look at both fee structures in much greater detail and give the companies, you know, the best guidance to say, look, this is exactly how the tax should be charged based on your fee structure, since they're both different.
Mr. Keel?
Follow up. I mean, if I remember our taxi code correctly, and it's been a while, we do require there be some sort of dispatcher. I believe those companies that contract with their drivers assess dispatch fee. So it sounds like that is taxed, whereas the closest comparable with the TNC would, as I understand, would not be taxed then, the disbooking fee?
I'm not familiar with the dispatch fee issue in the taxi code. I mean, I know that the total fare that the taxis pay is rolled into the meter and taxes backed out of it. That's what I can tell you. As far as the TNCs go, you know, I would say the fare is what the passenger pays, and that is what is taxed.
That's what I've been assuming.
So that was my initial assumption, but there's an email here forwarded, I think the manager forwarded it to us Friday, where it says the booking fees are not subject to sales tax, but okay, the fares paid by the rider are taxable. So I'm just trying to get clear.
Yeah. So I think what we've looked at is the booking fee is the amount charged by Uber itself, and it looks like that under our code it would be considered exempt from tax, or at least not taxable, because we're looking at it as a essentially an online service that's occurring rather than a physical service that's being provided in Juneau. So the fare that is the physical service is what would be taxed.
It's interesting. I would argue the location of the service is the location where it's delivered. So I guess my concern, and it may be most appropriate to ask the manager to bring this back to us, is whether this is level playing field with the way drivers who contract with taxi companies, dispatch fees, dispatch costs are handled. I don't know that we need to address that tonight unless you've got a clear answer, but I just looking for equity.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
I'm now, I want to understand what Mr. Singletary answered. Are you, if I get in a Lyft or an Uber, I pay $10. That is the amount that's taxed?
Depending on the fee structure, Uber has multiple parts of their what would make up the $10. So based on my understanding of how their fee structure works and how it applies to our code, only a portion of that $10 would be taxed. A portion of that is what we would consider to be the service provided in Juneau that would be subject to tax. So now what that portion of the $10 is, I don't exactly know, but
the service provided in Juneau is I paid $10 for it. That's what I would. I don't know what's in that fee, who paid who. When you say the booking fee, is that the driver paying the TNC? I don't know who's paying who, but a sale was conducted for $10 in Juneau, Alaska.
Okay, Mr. Manager.
Mr. Mayor, in the ordinance before you, 6905060, would read, every seller and TNC collecting and remitting sales tax on behalf of TNC drivers shall add the amount of the tax levied by this chapter to the total selling price. So I'm sure there's further discussion and investigation on equity between cabs and dispatching and how those fees are charged to their drivers. But that would be the language that we have in the ordinance if we pass it tonight. It sounds like this topic requires further investigation. And again, it may be honing in on that equitable field, but at least
As I said earlier, this starts us at least to address the big picture of imposition of the taxes.
Thank you very much.
Further discussion on the motion as amended. Mr. Edwardson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm just trying to wrap my brain around what's being talked about right now, and part of the $10, Ms. Gladyszewski's conceptual $10 isn't considered taxable because the transaction doesn't take place here. That's what I understand is being said, but the transaction is here. If I'm buying something from Amazon, then the transaction takes place someplace else. But if Uber or Lyft or whatever is sending information, the transaction is on the phone in Juneau. So I don't understand why that would be exempt from taxes.
Well, I guess you didn't see that shrug, so.
I heard it.
Through the mayor, as written, the tax would be levied on the total selling price, and that would be what we have to work with if this was passed. But I agree. It sounds like we have further work to investigate on how total selling price is defined and interpreted, and that there may be, it seems like a clear term, but there may be differences of opinion on what total selling price means.
Thank you.
Jones.
Thank you. I wish I could be more helpful, but having used Lyft in Minneapolis, Seattle, and New York City, New York City is the only one that itemized my charge to show a sales tax. They also showed a black car fund surcharge, which I found fascinating. But Seattle and Minneapolis, I got a flat charge. There's nothing that delineates any tax. I was Googling Seattle to find out if they charge a tax. Well, they're treating Uber much like taxis. They're trying to figure out what the minimum to drop charge is. Like right now for Uber, it's less than it is for a taxi. And they're thinking about trying to mandate how much the driver gets owed, because right now they're paying less to the driver than the taxi companies are paying to the driver, because Seattle, King County sets that limit. But it seems to me that this ordinance requires them to remit back to us. And I'm not sure I'm willing to give it a year if we're still not going to get tax collection. If we have five drivers registered and we get tax equivalent to 20 drivers, you know, then I think that tells us some information. If the who's registered at sales tax is available to Lyft, so they only pay for the drivers that are registered, then we don't get anything for the drivers that aren't. I know that the airport's sitting over here, and I can tell you that there's not a pilot that flies out of the airport. The FAA doesn't know who in the heck they are, what their background is, and if they're charging people to take people, they've gone through all kinds of exams and they file all kinds of records that the airport and the FAA knows about. And yet, we sit here and jawing around about whether or not I would be safe in a vehicle coming from the airport to my house that we have no regulations on. So I don't know whether to support this or not. The amendment passed, but if we can collect the sales tax that we're owed, and we can get some better handle on it, but I just don't see that happening. Not with this particular ordinance. So I'm not sure what I'm going to do, but that's it.
Okay. Any further discussion? Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, one additional question for the manager. The effective date of the ordinance, our standard is 30 days after we vote on it. But we've had these conversations tonight about what's going on today, and the law is still the law, and business is being done in Juneau, and sales tax is not being collected and remitted by a number of drivers anyway. You know, it's a difficult position that some of these folks are in. The state has said the business doing the business isn't the business in the business, and now we operate under that, and we have to write spaghetti into our code. Leaves us wondering how to vote. My question is about application, and where we're going to focus our look. I would hope that we look prospectively in this case, because folks who've looked to provide a service have been working through a business that officially isn't in the business, that doesn't provide the opportunity to do the right thing. Can you speak a little bit to where the focus will be if this passes tonight?
Mr. Mayor, the ordinance shall be effective 30 days after its adoption, and we would implement this looking prospectively.
Thank you.
Is there any other further discussion? Hearing none, is there objection to the motion as amended?
Yes.
Objection is noted. Will the clerk please call the roll?
On ordinance 2018-38, version B as amended, Mr. Nankervis?
Yes.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
No.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
Yes.
Mr. Edwardson?
Yes.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
And Mayor Kelch?
Yes.
Motion carries 6-1.
Okay, we're going to take a 6-minute break to see if we can get our head back together.
You're listening to KTOO Juneau, the regular City of Juneau Assembly meeting. The Assembly is on a 6-minute break, and between now and when they resume, there will be a musical interlude. Thank you.
Madam Clerk.
A request for reconsideration of Assembly decision regarding Tom Williams versus Airport Board Appeal 2018-04.
Mr. Palmer. Mr. Attorney.
Thank you. Mr. Williams filed an appeal of an airport board vote on August 13th. The Assembly decided not to accept the appeal. At the special Assembly meeting on August 20th, Mr. Williams petitioned the Assembly to reconsider its decision pursuant to CBJ Appellate Code 0150-180. On August 24th, the municipal clerk formally notified Mr. Williams of the Assembly's August 13th decision and notified Mr. Williams that his petition for reconsideration would be placed on the Assembly's September 17th meeting agenda. The Assembly may reconsider its August 13th decision, as stated in 0150-180A, quote, unless granted by an affirmative vote of the appeal agency, the petition for reconsideration is deemed denied, end quote. The choice is up to the Assembly tonight with its desire to, with this petition for reconsideration.
Thank you, Mr. Attorney. I am not hearing a motion for reconsideration. Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that the Assembly reconsider its decision not to take up the appeal.
All right, we do have a motion. And Madam Clerk, will you restate that motion, please, for us?
The motion by Mr. Keel is for the Assembly to take up reconsideration of the Tom Williams versus Airport Board Appeal 2018-04.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
I'm sorry, not to take up reconsideration. That's slightly different. We got into that a little confused. I move that the Assembly reconsider its decision.
Okay. All right. I will allow discussion on this.
Just speak. Briefly,
Mr. Gill has the floor right now, then Ms. Becker.
Just to speak briefly to the motion, this this is a close call in my view, and really the question we're looking at tonight is at what point can somebody bring a decision of an empowered board to the Assembly? I think that there are rational arguments on both sides, but ultimately I think that the airport board pointed the apparatus of the city in a direction, and a citizen paid the fee and asked the Assembly to check that. And he had many grounds he laid out. I don't think the only appealable point is when money gets spent or something or property gets taken. So I think this is an appropriate point for a citizen to bring an appeal to the Assembly. That's really the question here. Was there something appealable? And it's close, but I think there is.
Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I didn't hear all of what I think Mr. Keel was talking about, but I did want to make sure that I know it's already clear to everyone in the Assembly. This whole airport discussion was vented in the public, many public meetings, and the board has approved the action. So I do not feel that we would be making a good decision by taking this up again. I think it's I think it has been resolved by the board and by the public, and I hope that we continue to uphold the airport board.
Anyone else?
Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Edwardson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I understand and I sympathize with what Ms. Becker says, but there's nothing more fundamental than the ability to appeal a record decision. And I was on the fence and remained silent the last time we talked about this. And the more that I thought about it, the more I thought that I would rather err on the side of allowing somebody to take a grievance to the assembly. I don't believe that hearing an appeal is showing a lack of support for the airport board. But I do think that it's important that when there is a record decision, that an individual that's affected has an avenue to appeal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Edwardson. Mr. Jones.
Thank you. Question for the attorney. After our decision to not hear the appeal the last time, the airport then came in and gave us a presentation. They basically gave us a presentation on the issues that were part of the appeal. We asked questions. We didn't necessarily give any direction. We didn't say no. We didn't say yes. We took it as information. I feel that knowing that the appeal was out there, getting the presentation from the board, the inaction of this assembly to say no, ask different questions, showed us that the appeal probably would not be granted in my mind, and I want to know if there's a conflict. Since we heard from the airport board, we had a chance to ask all the questions we could have asked given Mr. Williams' initial appeal. We didn't. You know, we now have a conflict related to this appeal.
Mr. Attorney.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. There's a couple ways to look at this. That is definitely one way. There's another way to consider it that, number one, when the assembly heard the airport discussion, the request for reconsideration, if I believe Mr. Williams had not made that yet, that was made at the end of the meeting. Number two, as you described, the assembly did not make any decisions at that meeting one way or the other. And number three, just because the assembly heard that in its legislative capacity does not necessarily mean the assembly in its quasi-judicial capacity, which is the way it would hear this appeal, would be tainted or biased one way or the other. So I think it's still if the assembly decides to reconsider and accept the appeal, then there's still an opportunity for the assembly to provide its own checks and balance if its members believe that they can do so in an unbiased perspective.
Ms. Gladyszewski.
Can you refresh the assembly's memory and people listening why the attorney initially recommended or opined that this was not an appealable decision?
Mr. Attorney.
By recollection, I believe Ms. Mead described that this was not a final, that a final decision had not been reached for which there were legal consequences, and there are minutes, I believe, in the packet associated with Madam Clerk's letter to Mr. Williams that provide a little bit more detail, but I believe that was in the sum of of her, at least, advice.
Mr. Kale.
I guess my concern with the attorney's advice is that it leaves a situation like this one where the only thing that constitutes a final agency decision is actually when the assembly appropriates money, which is, of course, not appealable. So I have nothing but respect for Ms. Mead. The problem is it leaves our appeals code such that a citizen doesn't have any chance to challenge a decision by an appeals board because it somehow isn't a final agency decision the way she read the law. And I think this is a decision by an empowered board to set the machinery of the city and borough of Juneau in a particular direction. And I think we owe that, we owe a citizen a hearing on that.
Mr. Attorney.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I will offer one more piece of procedural guidance possibly for you, is that even if the assembly were to reconsider and accept the appeal, that doesn't preclude this argument from coming back up if the parties decide to brief it through that process.
Mr. Jones?
Since in the 6 years I've been on the assembly, the only appeals I've dealt with have been sales tax, property tax, and planning commission decisions.
And dogs.
That's true, and dogs. But there is a process that is required as part of that that it come to the assembly. So, but I sat on the hospital board for over 10 years, twice, two different times. I can think back to 20 or 25 different decisions that the hospital board made that doctors objected to, nurses objected to, unions objected to, that got ironed out, got argued out in public meetings, got argued out through processes there. I can't think of one time where anybody thought that any of those decisions were appealable to the assembly. The one time that was appealable was we gave a final and best offer to the union, and under the ordinance that set up the hospital board personnel rules, it says if you give final and best offer and they reject it, they can come to the assembly and the assembly will hear it. I can't imagine telling everybody that's down in the harbor that the minute they disagree with a decision of the harbor board, they can appeal to the assembly. I can't do that. I can't see how those policy calls, if it's a regulation, if it's, you know, interpretation of their own rules around setting rates or those kinds of things, yeah. But I cannot just a policy decision to move ahead in a certain direction that I know the hospital board does all the time, that I know that Docks and Harbors does all the time, that the school district does all the time. I do not understand how that kind of legislative policy decision gets appealable. So I'm not going to support the reconsideration.
Ms. Platyshevsky.
Mr. Palmer, can you address those? I have some of that same. What about anytime someone doesn't like what the Harbor Board does or any board that we haven't, I certainly haven't seen appeals of those decisions. Because in one hand, I agree with Mr. Keel about you should be able to appeal it, but everything?
Not everything. So the only decisions that are appealable are those under our code that are one final and that have some sort of legal implication or relevancy. A policy decision or a project that requires assembly funding, that probably can't be appealed until the assembly has fully funded it. And then possibly there's an opportunity for appeal. Where this one falls, I'm not quite sure. I will say that if there's hesitation, both for opening the floodgates or for reconsideration, that makes this one a very tough decision. And Ms. Mead provided her guidance. And I'm not going to disagree with that at this point.
When you say final or legal, what do those mean, final or legal?
So in our appeal code 0150020, it says the provisions of this chapter shall apply to the following administrative and quasi-judicial proceedings in which the legal rights, duties, and privileges or penalties of persons are to be determined. And then it later provides an appeal shall be filed only from a final agency decision. Decisions which are not appealable include, but are not limited to, decisions to recommend, advise, or request an action, even if the recommendation, advice, or request is procedurally required as a prerequisite to some other decision, which later decision is dispositive of the matter. So there's a way to read that a project that is not funded and that has not been completed through a design process is not a final agency decision. And I believe that's what Ms. Mead was suggesting. However, there are members on the Assembly that have suggested something a little bit different.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? It will take 5 votes to reconsider in the affirmative. Will you read the motion again, Madam Clerk?
The motion to take up reconsideration of Assembly Appeal Tom Williams versus Airport Board, Appeal Number 2018-04. Is that accurate?
Is the difference between take up reconsideration and the motion to reconsider as material as I think it is, Mr. Palmer?
It might be cleaner to say to reconsider.
To reconsider.
That's what you said.
The appeal, Tom Williams versus Airport Board, Appeal Number 2018-04.
All right. So a yes vote is to take up reconsideration. A no vote is not to take up reconsideration. Will you please call the roll?
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
No.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
Yes.
Mr. Edwardson?
Oops. Yes.
Ms. Becker?
No.
Mr. Nankervis?
No.
Mayor Kelch?
Yes.
Motion fails 4-3.
All right.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Since we didn't take up, we didn't reconsider our decision, what is it automatically the $500 appeal fee gets returned, or do we have to take an affirmative action to request the manager to return the applicant's appeal fee?
Mr. Manager, did you have your hand up?
I did not.
that was a pause.
Mr. Palmer is checking the code on that issue.
Mr. Attorney.
Thank you. I think the easiest way to interpret our code is if the Assembly wants the appeal fee to be returned, the Assembly needs to pass a motion to order so.
Mr. Jones.
Mr. Mayor, I would move that the Assembly instruct the manager to return the applicant Tom Williams appeal fee. I would ask unanimous consent.
Is there objection? The motion carries. Now I need to find out where we are again.
Land sale.
New business.
New business. Madam Clerk.
Margaret Tharp and David Lindrum's request to purchase CBJ property, Lot 3, Bonnie, Subdivision, USS 2392.
Mr. Manager.
The Lands Committee discussed this topic at its meeting on August 6, 2018, and unanimously recommended that the Assembly work with the original applicants, Margaret Tharp and David Lindrum, to dispose of this CBJ property in a manner that would result in platting a 60-foot wide public access and utility easement through lots 2 and 3 of Bonnie Subdivision, U.S. Survey 2392. I request a motion authorizing staff to work with the original proposer.
Ms. Gladyszewski.
I would move that the Assembly authorize the manager to work with the original proposal on this item.
Okay. And, there's two people here. I'm sorry. Did either one of you want to make public comment?
No, Mr. Mayor.
Sorry. All right. So we have a motion.
I'll object.
All right. Because that's the way today's going to be. All right. Did you wish to speak to your motion, Ms. Gladyszewski?
No, the manager did so adequately. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Jones, did you wish to?
I do. This area where this business is, Landscape Alaska, has and was very controversial when the Planning Commission allowed the business to be at the end of a residential private driveway, basically. That was not up to code, to city street code. This Assembly had multiple appeals. I know that the appellant, I think that's the right word, lost eventually in the state Supreme Court, trying to prevent this business from what they felt was ruining their neighborhood, lots of commercial traffic on their road, drainage issues into neighbors, and just a lack of what they felt was unattention by the city, CDD, and the business to their concerns. And all during that time, the city continued to say that the land next to them, behind them, that was city property, we had no intention of doing anything with. It was set up to add to a potential subdivision on the other side. And throughout that entire process, the city never once said that this land was available for sale, that they would consider selling it to the neighbors, let alone to the business, to increase the business's business on a street that the landowners and the neighbors didn't want. I just cannot understand why now, simply because there was a request, that the city has ignored all of that. And I didn't attend the Lands Committee. I haven't reviewed the minutes. I cannot understand. I did read, I think, the Lands Office's statement to the Lands Committee, but it never mentioned anything about the appeal, about the neighbors, about anything about that, you know, about CDD going out and trying to review the drainage and look at whether they widened the road correctly and whether or not they had the small enough vehicles, whether the bigger or larger delivery. It just went on and on and on. So I don't think that we should work with the original requester. And I think even farther than that, this land should not be up for sale at this particular point to any private business until all of the other CBJ land that's connected to this and that area in there gets dealt with. And so I just don't feel that this is the right time to bring that subject back up, which I'm sure, as I'm sitting here, will be back before us by the neighbors if we start negotiating privately with this one particular business. So I am going to be a no vote.
Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. A question for staff. Has there been any notice provided of this application to the neighborhood? I have a slightly different recollection from Mr. Jones. I remember that discussions of the applicant's interest in this lot were part of the appeals. I think the appellants considered it to be a done deal at the time, and there were discussions that the Planning Commission's decision and any question about the city property were separate, but that was discussed. So the question in my mind is whether there has been notice to the neighborhood and we haven't heard back, or whether we would better provide that notice to the neighborhood by possibly advertising this rather than going with the original proposer.
Mr. Mayor, I'm going to look at Mr. Cheney and see if I have this proper, and if he shakes his head no, we'll bring him up here. But our lands code requires that when somebody comes in through the door and asks to purchase a parcel, that our next step is to come to the assembly. Title 49 also requires that the commission review land disposals and comment to the assembly. And what I do not know is if we noticed the neighborhood of the proposed purchase, and if we noticed it, Mr. Cheney can nod affirmatively or negatively. So apparently we did not notice the neighborhood, so that would be excess to the code requirement in Title 53 for land sale, but would certainly be a part of the commission review under Title 49.
Mr. Jones.
And just to comment, I didn't say that it was never talked about. I simply said the city said there was no interest in selling that land or leasing that land. There was all kinds of discussions about that, but it was continually said there's no interest. And if we now have an interest in this simply because we were asked, I really object. If we have an interest in selling it, there may be other neighbors that would want to buy it. If nothing else, to block further development of a business they don't agree with. So I cannot see where, in good conscience, we should move ahead with this at all.
Mr. Manager.
Mr. Mayor, Mr. Jones essentially is identifying one of the purposes of Title 53. It's the assembly decision. We did not advertise this parcel of land for sale, and we had an applicant come in the door, and the fundamental decision for the assembly is to whether to work with the, in the term of Title 53, the original proposer, or to solicit for other potential purchasers. That is the fork in the road that you have tonight. Or no sale could also be a choice.
You gave us three choices, but your recommendation is to work with the original proposer.
Mr. Mayor, I'm following up on the Lands Committee's recommendation, so I would defer to Lands Committee and the information and deliberation that they felt was germane.
Mr. Cheney.
So I'm Greg Cheney, Lands Manager. There is one piece of information that has not come up yet, and that is that the original proposer, in this case, the Lindrum family, has proposed to provide a 60-foot wide access easement to our property, which no other party can provide. So that is the unique feature in their proposal, which has made us interested in this. If they had just asked to buy the property, the answer would probably have been no, or we would have recommended against going with the original proposer. But we have over 500 acres between us and the university uphill from here. We have one access at this point on this side of the property. This would provide us a second 60-foot wide access opportunity. It's not the best access, but it is the reason we own the property. But we only own 30 feet on the panhandle. This would give us a 60-foot wide access. So that's the reason we're here with a positive recommendation. So that's the little bit of additional information that we'd like to provide.
Ms. Podeszewski.
So just to clarify, if you offered it for sale and someone else wanted to buy it, you wouldn't want to do that?
At this point, we want to hold on to this property because we have a 30-foot wide access corridor through the panhandle. The Lindrums have offered us a 60-foot wide because they own the other 30 feet of the panhandle. That would give us 60 feet, which is superior to 30 feet. So that's what makes this worth considering. Otherwise, we wouldn't sell.
Thank you.
All right. Any other discussion? Mr. Gale.
It seems to me, Mr. Mayor, that this is a situation where it's worth advertising to other parties. So I think I am going to recommend a no vote on the motion.
Any further discussion? Ms. Plaszewski.
I would just say because of what the CBJ could get that we couldn't get from other parties, I would support this motion, the 60-foot wide easement, and take the expertise of the lands manager in that regard.
Anyone on the phone that wants to
I would just, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Mr. Edwardson.
Yeah, I would only echo that I agree with Mr. Cheney in that a 60-foot easement would provide a lot better access to CBJ land, and that's why I voted for it on the land committee, and I plan to vote for it again tonight.
All right. Madam Clerk, will you restate the motion, please?
The motion was for the manager to authorize him to work with the original proposer, Margaret Tharp and David Lindrum, with respect to the purchase of CBJ property, Lot 3, Bonnie Subdivision, USS 2392.
All right. You have the motion before you, and there has been objection stated. Will you please call the roll, Madam Clerk?
Mr. Edwardson?
Yes.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
No.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
Yes.
Mr. Keel?
No.
Mr. Nankervis?
Yes.
Mayor Kelch?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-2.
Okay, that brings us to senior citizen, disabled veteran, late filed hardship exemption applications. And who gets this one? Mr. Manager.
The assessor received two below referenced senior citizen, disabled veteran, real property hardship exemption applications, which are being forwarded to the Assembly for consideration. The action required by the Assembly is to determine whether or not the late filed tax assessment appeal will be heard. Evidence on the assessment itself or the merit of the appeal is not relevant. The Assembly should consider each request separately and determine whether or not the property owner was unable to comply with the 30-day filing requirement. Burden of proof is upon the property owner to show the inability to file a timely appeal. In this context, the word unable does not include situations in which a property owner forgot about it or overlooked. The assessment notice was out of town during the period for filing an appeal or similar situations. Rather, it covers situations that are beyond the property owner's control and would prevent a property owner from recognizing what is at stake in dealing with it. Examples of this would include physical or mental disability serious enough to prevent a person from dealing rationally with their private affairs. Disagreeing with the amount of the assessment does not constitute inability to submit a timely appeal, nor does a notice of assessment being sent to a wrong address. The property owner is responsible for keeping a correct address on file with the assessor's office. If the Assembly decides to accept one or more late filed appeals, those assessment appeals will be referred to the assessor for review and action.
What is the will of the Assembly? Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have two motions. My first motion would be to forward the appeal for parcel ID 5B21010600010. That late filed appeal to the assessment appeal, to
refer to the assessor for review and action.
Is there objection? Hearing none. It was 5B?
That was 5B21, correct.
Okay, 5B21. Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My second motion would be to forward parcel ID 5B14010400061. That assessment appeal, refer that to the assessor's office for review and action.
Mr. Jones.
I'm going to object for a question, and I may object. In reading the material for this one, the rationale for the late file was the applicant was waiting for a disability determination from the VA. And if I remember right, the VA determination came in after the filing date. So the question is, I think our code requires that in the year I turn 65, I can't get the property tax exemption, but I can the next year. So if he didn't qualify as a veteran with disability at the filing date, was determined later, we can't go back and say, well, I have to file now that I got the determination. I couldn't meet the deadline because at the time of the deadline, the person didn't qualify. So help me out here before we refer sure. this.
Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Edwardson.
I guess the thing that I would say in response to that is if you weren't 65 yet, you weren't 65. Well, the disabled veteran was disabled. They were just waiting on a determination.
All right. Let's go back to Mr. Attorney.
Mr. Edwardson provides one example. Mr. Jones has provided another rationale on this one. There's a little bit different nuance here with this standard than the just the senior citizen component, and that you have to be unable to comply with the deadline. And possibly, if the assembly wants to go there, the assembly could look. And I don't have a page number in my packet, but in the back is, I believe, three sentence description describing that a disability had been made after the fact. It's not clear whether that disability would prevent the individual from being unable to comply or not. So I think this is a close call.
Mr. Jones?
But I think it wasn't the inability to apply. You know, the person didn't have the disability from the VA. So he couldn't prove by our requirements that you have that definition. And I understand that he applied well in time had the VA worked faster. We all know that some of those disability claims take 2 or 3 years. Could have met the deadline. But, you know, if the application had taken 3 years from the VA, and he applied every year, would we go back for 3 years? I don't think so. So I don't want this to come back to us in an appeal if the assessor uses the same rationale and says no. If Mr. Nankervis's motion is to send it back for action and review, if they say no, then we'll end up with another appeal. So I'm trying to avoid that situation for the applicant. But at the same time, if you can't apply because you don't have a certification that you have a veteran's disability, I don't see how you can then go back when you get it for that year. The next year, he'd be free and clear.
I recognize that, and I also recognize that this puts the applicant in an awkward position because the disability had not been formally the disability determination had not been formally made prior to the application deadline, but the application deadline and in the application, it doesn't describe that the applicant was unable to comply.
Any further questions? Mr. Jones, do you maintain your objection?
No, I think this will probably come back to us.
Right. There is a motion. Is there an objection? Seeing and hearing none, the motion is carried. Well, we're just moving right along tonight, so let's get to the staff reports.
I have no staff report.
Thank you. Not that you didn't have any, but that one didn't bog us down. Mayor's report. Southeast Conference last week in Ketchikan, September 12th through the 14th. Great host. Information PAC conference. A job well done by Ketchikan and Southeast Conference. Wednesday, the 26th, 3 to 4:30, dedication ceremony, Jackie Street Cottages Housing Built Program. Friday, the 28th, noon, West Douglas Pioneer Road dedication. Saturday, the 29th, noon dedication for Project Playground. And October 2nd, what is happening, Madam Clerk?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. A very important date. It's called Election Day for the municipal election. Polls will be open 7 a.m. to 8 p.m.
Do you have any information on early voting?
I do. We are currently undergoing early and absentee voting. We have absentee and early voting stations here located at City Hall on the second floor next to the clerk's office and also at the Minden Hall Mall Annex. The City Hall hours are Monday through Friday, 8 to 4:30 p.m. The Minden Hall Mall Annex are open Monday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. and Saturdays, noon till 4.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. And that is the mayor's brief report to be emulated. Ms. Gladyszewski.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Human Resources Committee met this afternoon, recommends the appointment to the American Disabilities Act Committee of Charlene Steinman for a term beginning now, ending August 31, 2021.
Is there objection to the nomination? The nomination is approved.
Committee also recommends the appointment of Will Muldoon to a term on the Parks and Rec Advisory Committee, beginning immediately and ending February 28, 2019.
Is there objection to the nomination? The nomination is approved.
The committee also recommends that the CBJ co-apply with St. Vincent de Paul for a fiscal 18 community developed block grant to develop the Dan Austin Transitional Support Services Center.
Okay, is there objection to that motion, Mr. Dan Kervis?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't have an objection. Just clarifying question. Does that involve the city do?
The grant must be submitted by the city, so it will be developed by St. Vincent de Paul and submitted by the city.
Thank you.
Mr. Jones?
Requirement for the funding must go to the city.
I think that's an information item because I believe the process is that CDD will develop a resolution to come back before the assembly at a regular meeting, and that resolution then must be passed and submitted as part of the grant. So it's not a motion to approve tonight, although the committee told them to go ahead and prepare that resolution for us, but it's not something to approve tonight.
Okay, Madam Chair, is that your understanding?
The applicants need to begin to work on those applications, so they want to be sure that they are. I think that it would be appropriate to approve their working on the applications. They don't want to work on an application for 2 months and then not it gets submitted by the city.
So what you're asking is that we give them direction that we would like them to continue working on this?
Yes.
Zero objection to
that.
Thank
you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Jones.
I'm going to object on procedural grounds because what we are doing now is voting on something that's technically not before us, and when the resolution comes before us, it'll be part of the consent agenda, but we will have already submitted our votes, and at least two of the members here that are voting won't be here when it comes back. So I just, on a procedural ground, I'm going to object.
Okay.
Mr. Manager.
Mr. Mayor, if this body wishes to express its will, how about a motion requesting a resolution in support of the application be heard at whatever date it's going to be heard?
I'm looking to the chair of the committee, so.
Requesting the drafting of a resolution supporting the application of St. Vincent de Paul for a community development block grant.
Mr. Gill.
Thank you. I guess for us to take action tonight is redundant. Under our rules of procedure, the Human Resources Committee tonight directed staff to draft a resolution on this matter to come back to the full assembly. So we don't have to direct them twice. A standing committee can do that.
Okay.
So I just kind of think it's redundant.
Madam Chair, are you happy with
yes,
that?
Yes, sir.
Very good. Continue on, please.
The hospital board met on August 28th. Is that meeting they approved giving $250,000 to the Housing First project. Housing First came in, gave a presentation. Also, the GEMA, the emergency room doctors, volunteered an extra funds for that project to the tune of $15,000, which was very much appreciated. And they had a lot of committee reports, and they also continued the CEO review process. I have a question. Are we doing comments and questions now, too, or just committee reports?
We're doing it all.
We're doing it all. So, Mr. Manager, I have a question about the Mental Health Trust meeting and process of what they're doing regarding the lot C1 on the subport area. I know the city and many other people over the years have been interested in those parcels. There, if you could review very briefly what has been done, all the processes that have been done, where they are right now, and what is the best avenue for the city to be involved in moving that off the dime?
Mr. Mayor, I'll try and be brief. This is a long-running topic. In December of 2016, or in the fall of 2016, the trust advertised for disposal of the lot. They received proposals. They received several proposals. They received one that offered, I think, 20 or 25% above market value. The trust did not respond to that proposal. There is a nonprofit group, the Ocean Center, that has teamed up with that proposed buyer. The trust has generally not been responsive to that group, and they've advised that they needed to wait for the legislative audit before they could decide how to dispose of their property. The legislative audit determined that, or the legislative audit was centering around the question of whether the trust was following statute and regulation. In June of 2017, the Assembly passed Serial 2799, a resolution in support of disposal of the lot by the trust authority, and the Assembly advised that the trust could meet its fiduciary responsibility to its beneficiaries by selling the property. The trust did not respond to that resolution. In February of 2018, at a suggestion that I made to the nonprofit group, the McDowell Group, an economist with the McDowell Group provided a financial analysis signed off on by both principals, advising the trust that their analysis of a couple of cash flow models that the trust could meet their fiduciary responsibility best by selling the property. The legislative audit report was released in about May of this year, finding that the trust had not followed statute properly. At that time, the trust did two things. One, they wrote a letter back to legislative audit, essentially telling legislative audit, we've read your audit and we don't agree. And in my opinion, the analysis they provided is thin. The audit is conclusive. It is a well-researched, well-documented audit. I recall on the order of 100 pages. And the trust board and director submitted a letter back to audit saying, essentially, we don't think so without backing it up. It befuddles me that an organization that is a land trust that is mission is to raise funds for their social service programs has gone to such great length to avoid sale of a parcel of land at above market value and then invest the proceeds in the Alaska Permanent Fund, which performs remarkably well. I think I can think of no landowner that would not enjoy the opportunity to sell at 25% over market value and invest in the permanent fund. The permanent fund over the last 5 years has gained 8.9%, and the last 2 years over 10. Tomorrow, the trust has a public process whereby they've invited the Urban Land Institute to provide a team of experts to come and analyze the property and advise them what to do. I've been advised by the Mental Health Trust director that they believe the cost of that audit is going to be on the order of $40,000. In my opinion, it is overblown. And that the trust can best serve their mission by selling the property. I have communicated with the trust regularly over the past 2.5 years, firmly in every way possible. I believe it would be appropriate to follow up with a letter signed by the mayor that I would draft detailing this issue. And I believe the letter should go to the Board of Trustees and the Trust Director. I believe the issue is not that complicated. And at the Trust, their statute requires them to make decisions in the best interests of the Trust and its beneficiaries, which is mostly synonymous with creating revenue for their programs. There's a strong case that they have been a poor manager of their public mission, and I don't say that lightly. So with the Assembly's consent, I would draft that letter for signature by the mayor.
So I would ask the Assembly's support of that action, writing a letter to the Mental Health Trust Board to be signed by the mayor regarding this issue.
This mayor or the next mayor?
This mayor, Mr. Mayor.
I mean,
mayor.
You know, you already said you're putting two of us out of here. So on the way out, I get to throw a grenade.
Do it for the meeting tomorrow.
Befuddling is a good word. We've been talking about this issue for years. It seems fairly straightforward, and I understand they need to do their due diligence, but now they're going to start a whole other process. And I think we should make our opinion known again in case they forgot our resolution 2799.
But fortunately, the manager had all those. So you have a motion.
That was the motion, okay. to support us sending a letter in that regard.
Is there objection? Okay, the motion is carried.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Jones.
Thank you. The Public Works and Facilities Committee met on the 27th of August. The two committee members that are left had information about the project labor agreement for an airport project to establish one. We got a Valley Transit update and an EV charging update. Next meeting is September 24th. The Juneau School Board met on September 11th, and I did not attend. Their next meeting is October 9th. The Downtown Business Association met on September 11th. I did not attend. I've been inquired when their next meeting is. Should be on the 2nd of October, but given that's election day, they may move it a week to the 9th. Joint Commission on Aging met September 11th. I did not attend. Their next meeting is October 9th. And that's it for me.
Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't think there's ever been a time when Mr. Jones has not attended so many meetings.
I was attending to something else. Thank you very much. It's
a well-deserved respite. Let's see. I'll follow in his suit. The UAS Campus Council last met on September the 10th. Because of the religious holiday, I did not attend. I did, however, get to attend the campus kickoff on August 31st, which was a wonderful event, a huge number of activities going on for folks either living on or hovering around the campus, and the university did a great job with that. The topic of the campus council on the 10th, by the way, was the Alaska College of Education. And let me add my appreciation to the Community Foundation for their work there, in addition to the public investment in that that endowment for the Teacher Excellence Fund. I attended the Alaska Municipal League summer meeting. It's been a long time since we had a regular assembly meeting. During August, major topics of discussion were the state's long-term budget solution and the league's support for state revenue solutions. There was also a candidate forum where the two of the three major party candidates for governor, or I should say two of the three well-known candidates for governor, participated. The league is also convening an expert group on some of the questions that have been raised about internet sales tax. Whether that requires some sort of statewide sales tax, whether that requires entering into the national streamlined sales tax agreement. The Municipal Attorneys Association took it up before the rest of the league, and they didn't reach any solid conclusions either, so thus the expert group. My hope that Mr. Bartholomew will participate in that. He has been active in researching those issues and a great resource for the rest of the league. The Municipal League is also advertising a contract for lobbyist services on behalf of the league. Its longtime contract lobbyist has retired, so that RFP is out there. Let's see. Was pleased to attend the annual Labor Day celebration. Saw quite a few assembly members there, along with a tremendous number of folks from the community. To thank those folks for doing a great job. Also privileged to attend the 9/11 memorial at Riverside Rotary Park, put on by one of the Rotary clubs. I saw just about every assembly member at that as well, and they always do a remarkable job honoring and thanking our first responders. Speaking of honoring past lives, also attended a memorial for Kay Shelton, who was, state librarian, active with historical collections, and one of the original progenitors of the idea of a combined state library archives museum. And she lived to see it completed, but a great loss to our community. Was privileged to attend the Southeast Conference as well, and I'll only add to the mayor's comments that I was gobsmacked to hear that the Department of Transportation is developing plans before one of the two day boats being built for the Lynn Canal Run has left the shipyard, and with the other just in the water, but we haven't yet taken possession of it, to redesign and repurpose those vessels, about $100 million in. I am deeply concerned that the net result of that will be to take those vessels off of the purpose they were designed and built for, daily, predictable, scheduled service to the communities of Lynn Canal. I would ask that we direct the manager to write to the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities and express our concern. Those vessels were designed and built for that purpose as the only part of the Juneau Access project that never saw a lawsuit. I think every other part of it had controversy, but every long-term plan for transportation in Southeast Alaska calls for, at some point or other, a move toward day boat shuttle ferries on a predictable schedule. We've seen that largely succeed with the Inter-Island Ferry Authority south of us. Without writing the language at the table, I would ask that we direct the manager to weigh in with the Department of Transportation on behalf of our community and the others in Lynn Canal.
Is there objection to that direction? Okay.
Thank you. That's it for me.
Thank you. Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Committee of the Whole last met on August 29th, where we discussed the Airport North Terminal, which is actually part of the whole terminal, but the northern end of the terminal. We talked about the comp plan update and abandoned vehicles. Our next meeting is set for Monday, September 24th, time change to 5 p.m. 5 p.m. was available now, as Ms. Becker has canceled the Lands Committee meeting that was scheduled for 5, so hopefully we can get home before 10 that night. Tentative topics include the historic plan, the JEDC survey, museum and chamber presentation on freight costs. And that's it for the committee. As Mr. Keel pointed out, many of us were at the 9/11 memorial service and at the picnic on Labor Day. Many of us were also at a fundraiser this last weekend at the Filipino Hall, and we got to eat some great food. Everybody did that. At least I saw everybody eating there. So you don't want to leave without eating some of that great food. And I was asked by the mayor to present the electric vehicle proclamation. I didn't write that date down. I think that was the 8th, on the 8th, September 8th. And we had several assembly members there as well, and that went off with pretty good attendance. I would say 150 people there. Mr. Jones was trying to help me count, and I ran out of fingers. I think we got to about 150. So that was well attended, and thank you for asking me to go in your stead. I know you were otherwise engaged that day. And that is all I have for tonight. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. There's been a few things I have not been able to attend because of being down here. One was JEDC, and thank you, Mr. Jeff, Mayor, for being there and covering that one. Also, the airport board met while I was on my way to Southeast Conference. Next meeting is October 9. Alaska Committee is Wednesday. I'll call in for that. Southeast Conference was really a great conference. Many topics, many of them quite short, but we covered lots of things. There was also a governor's forum then at that meeting, which was very interesting. Milani did by the numbers, which was a lot more positive than last year. Last year was pretty dismal. This year it looks like things are coming a little bit, getting up a little bit. The chamber had a governor's forum. Lands Committee, next one will be October 9th, I think. Maybe it's later than that, I remember actually. I want to add my also comments about Kay Shelton that Jesse mentioned, and just echo all the good things he said, because she was a very definitely a dynamic woman, and will be the loss will be felt in our community. I want to also congratulate and Lorraine Burr for the proclamation and for all the many, many things she does. And also a thank you to the Project Playground workers. And I believe that's it. Thank you, Ms. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Becker. Mr. Edwardson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Been traveling, so I didn't hit a lot of meetings, but the Docks and Harbors, their next meeting is going to be on September 27th. Next meeting for the Local Emergency Planning Committee is October 17th. I, too, attended the 9/11 memorial ceremony, and I think I've hit pretty much every year since that was started, and I really appreciate all of the people who put that on. I appreciated seeing the rest of the assembly members there. Buried in the consent agenda resolutions tonight, there was a discussion of a ceremony that Sea Alaska Heritage put on that dedicated three totem poles, three bronze totem poles, out in front of the Sea Alaska Heritage building. There's also accompanying wood painted totem poles that were done by the same artists. And there were artists, the three artists were from Heidelberg, from Metlakatla, and I believe the third was from Ketchikan. So they're fantastic pieces of art, and I know every time I've passed them, there are people marveling at them. So that's my report. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. There are no presiding officers' report that I'm aware of. Is there anyone behind you, Dallas? All right, so I don't think there's anybody for public participation on non-agenda items here. So that leads us to the executive session. Maybe we have a motion to go into executive session. Mr. Gill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that the Assembly recess into executive session to discuss a matter which by law may be kept confidential, specifically contract negotiations, the immediate knowledge of which could have a detrimental effect on the finances of the city and borough of Juneau.
Is there any objection to that? All right. Let's move into executive session.